This is The Think Tank, talking about the major political, economic, and social issues of the week. With Dr. Mike O'Neill and hosted by Mike Russell. KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com. The Think Tank.
Okay, Mike O'Neill here. Mike Russell gone fishing, so I'm here alone or with guest Chuck Coughlin, Republican guru. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Mike. It's nice to be here.
In our second segment, Chuck will tell us the name of the next president of the United States, but we're going to make you wait for that. But first, we want to provide our own analysis, and I'll give it to you in musical form, the gist of the results of Super Tuesday. Well, you get the gist of that?
I do get it. That's very good.
You know, up to this point, Trump has won 10 primaries. Cruz 4, Rubio 1. On the Democratic side, Clinton has won 10 primaries. Sanders has won 5. Take the Democrats first here. Sanders, my take is he has exceeded expectations. He has won in the sense that I think he was a guy who set out to make a point.
Yes.
Tried to nudge the Democratic Party a little bit to the left. He has completely succeeded in that. He will not be the nominee. And there's no reason for him to drop out.
No, not. I agree with that. There's no really reason for him to drop out at this point, unless he perceives such a threat to the Republic by Mr. Trump that he wants to unify the Democratic base, and Hillary would make some concessions his way in terms of some of the more populist issues on banking reform and some of those things that would create a unified Democratic Party and a unified message platform going into the summer months here and leading up to the convention. But I would agree with you that that race is over. He probably stays in, but I see a chance of him getting out.
Yeah, if he starts to get embarrassed and he starts, you know, his numbers start to go way down. But I think he's already nudged her on some issues.
Absolutely. And
he will be
that.
There to keep her honest. He gets, I think, a very prominent role at the convention. And I probably think the only risk at the convention is that when they have Bernie night, which they inevitably will, all the news media are going to watch that and run the risk of a higher level of enthusiasm for her than for Hillary.
Well, it's really important. I mean, there's a portion of the electorate that Bernie appeals to that's very important to the Democratic base. It's that same portion of the electorate that Obama really motivated in 08. It was the aspirational young voters that came out in droves to support then-Senator Obama. With that narrative that he drove throughout that campaign. So I think it's critical, it really will be critical for the Clinton campaign to co-opt a part of that narrative and get Bernie to be vocally supportive of the ticket. And that may take some doing in terms of policy shifts for her as it relates particularly to the banking industry, which also could become a problem for the Republican nominee in the fall as well.
And he's a policy guy. I mean, I listened to those debates. Those were the most policy-oriented debates I've ever heard at the presidential level.
Yeah.
Completely devoid. And I think I give a lot of that credit to Bernie.
Yeah.
I'm not going to talk emails. I'm not going to talk Benghazi. I'm going to talk policy only.
Right. And that is another reason where he may want to jump out, because there is a pending Justice Department investigation. Mm-hmm. There is a professional team of Justice Department officials and FBI officials actively investigating.
Who are not political appointees.
Who are not political appointees, who they've just granted amnesty to one of the Clinton operatives that installed the platform in her house. So there's more to come there. And that will result in some recommendation to Loretta Lynch. And at some point, the attorney general will make a decision to proceed with prosecution. The problem there was how they handled the Petraeus case previously. In the Petraeus case, when there was leaked information, that was pled down in such a significant manner as to make this instance look very, very pedestrian. So I suspect it will go that way eventually for her. But there's still career U.S. Justice Department officials looking at that, and it could cause problems for over the summer.
Yeah, and one thing that we've noticed, for example, in the case of Joe Arpaio, when the feds get involved in it, it doesn't happen fast.
No, I've witnessed that as my time with Governor Symington. There was a 7.5-year investigation. The one thing about the feds is they have unlimited amounts of resources to investigate you, and it almost becomes guilt by accusation after a period of time.
Okay. Republican side, a little bit different in that I think Cruz and Rubio still think they have a path to winning. Mm-hmm. They may be roughing up Trump some more.
Oh, they will. As you alluded to earlier, and I'm sure we'll talk about in a minute, the former presidential nominee Mitt Romney took a piece out of his hide, or attempted to take a piece out of his hide earlier today, on Thursday. And so what we're looking at now is and what could change, I think the conventional wisdom that it's and what the Republican base is doing now is reacting as they may have should 3 months before Iowa. They are going to empty the clip into him to see what will, you know, if it's, but it may be too late. What we'll know as of Saturday, this Saturday, is whether Trump can win in closed primaries. There's only one primary that he's won so far that was a closed caucus. That was Nevada. He lost Iowa. He lost Oklahoma. And he lost Alaska. All were closed states where only Republican voters were allowed to vote. The four that are on Saturday, Kansas, Kentucky, Louisiana, and Maine, are all closed. To date, that's been Trump's Achilles heel, is to be able to compete in a closed primary. So we'll find out. Can he be successful on Saturday? And if so, I think he's going to be the nominee.
Yeah.
We blew the lead, didn't we?
No. The lead was for President of the United States.
We haven't gone there yet.
Well, we both agree that at a very minimum, I mean, I think Clinton has the nomination, and Trump is at a minimum the presumptive nominee. I got to tell you, just one more minute before I go, I got to tell you that Romney's speech just knocked my socks off. I cannot recall somebody of the level of a presidential candidate taking on somebody, a presidential nominee taking on a member of their own party.
We're going to see the pit bull of New Jersey just take his legs off here a moment right after that.
Well, so. That'll be interesting to watch. As promised, we will be back in the think tank. And Chuck Coughlin will, among other things, give us the name of the next president of the United States from somebody you ought to know. We'll be back in just a moment. This is KTAR 92.3 FM.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Okay, as promised now, we're going to take, for sake of argument, a given that the nominees are Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump and see where that goes. I'm going to set this up by saying, by the way, I'm here back again with Chuck Coughlin, Republican guru, and I'm going to set this up with really what I think is the conventional analysis of the situation. Most, but not all, of the Republicans return to the fold because that's what usually happens. 100% of the Bernie Sanders people vote for Hillary. Trump is extremely unpopular with independents and with Democrats, forget it. There'll be no crossover. And people are describing the potential as akin to 1964, 1972, which were the blowouts of Goldwater and McGovern, with probably the caveat that back in those days, the base of each party was probably 40%. It's probably 45 now we're more partisan and probably, you know, there's fewer and fewer people who are in that truly independent, undecided moat. Anyway, the Republicans are talking about, you know, what do we do, for example, to keep from losing the Senate? Mm-hmm. They smell it, and losing some in the House probably not enough.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, we're seeing a Republican establishment that at some levels is going apoplexic. McConnell is the Senate Republican leader is strategizing how candidates can distance themselves from candidate Trump in order to preserve that frail Republican majority in the Senate. By the way, just one fact, and I'm going to turn it over to you. Larry Sabato, one of the best prognosticators in the business, had the layout of the Senate as follows. This is pre-Trump. He says 47 Democrats, 50 Republicans, and 3 toss-ups. He said if Trump – there's a Trump map that is sort of the Republicans' worst nightmare, and he calculated that as 51 Democrat, 48 Republican, and 1, which would be Ohio, undecided. And he also had this whole analysis of how historically Republicans distanced themselves from Goldwater in 64 and how Democrats did the same with McGovern. Now, that all of that is presumptive on what looks like a Trump disaster.
Right.
You have another scenario.
I do. And the thing that I would observe historically with regards to those cycles that you mentioned before is I'd agree with you that there's much more party loyalty back in those cycles. Today, party loyalty is almost a near non-existent factor within candidates and the electorate. You're down to roughly 25 to 30% of the Republican electorate will vote straight ticket. Similarly, on the Democratic side, you may be a little bit more loyalty that way, depending on what the offering is out there. But as we all know, the rise of independents and the rise of unaffiliated PNDs, party not disclosed, are bigger and bigger segments of the electorate. So they will be the voters that will be largely up for grabs in this cycle that didn't exist before. Now, if you leave it to its own conventional wisdom, and those two, Clinton and Trump, are your nominees, we just got out of the field this past weekend on a survey here in Arizona. We asked the Arizona electorate a 2016 cycle to rate the favorability or unfavorability of both Clinton and Trump. Trump came in at a 1, meaning highly unfavorable, with 45% of the electorate.
This is on a scale of 1 to what?
1 to 5.
1 to 5.
1 to 5, meaning 1 was, you can't get any worse.
He's got 45% giving him the most negative rating possible.
Clinton came in at a 49.
Uh-huh.
So
virtually the same.
Virtually the same. And so you begin to wonder.
This is Arizona.
It is, but I think that's, they're both really well-known quantities or what people think they know of them. Mm-hmm. They're out there. So it becomes a question of, do we get a dramatic and historic low voter turnout, and who does that benefit? I would argue that would benefit a Trump candidacy over a Clinton candidacy.
It benefits, by every conventional analysis, low turnout benefits the Republicans.
Right.
Because
they
have the loyal voters.
Right. And so last year here in Arizona, we had a 30-year, or 2 years ago, we had a 30-year low voter turnout. If things are looking and trending that way, that could be the case. Here's the wild card in the mix. Both candidates now have run campaigns, particularly Trump. I mean, the old conventional wisdom, back to the cycle you just referred to in the Richard Nixon McGovern campaign, don't let anybody get to the right of you. Well, certainly Donald has qualified. It may not be the right, your father's right, but it is, or your mother's right. It is the new right. It's the angry, unaffiliated, don't like Washington, don't like Mitt Romney, who just trashed him, don't like any of the incumbents, want to throw all the bums out, because that's the rhetoric that Washington generates.
It's certainly the anger.
That's the rhetoric that Ted Cruz generates around himself. That's the rhetoric that a majority of the Republican leadership, in being so anti-Obama and not articulating any vision of their own, have created this rhetorical swamp that they're all now boiling in. And so can Trump then use that to say, I'm not them. I'm not going to be them. And then go pick a John Kasich. Go pick. I saw the debate the other night on CNN where, you know, he looked down the stage and he said, you know, I'm going to have to pick a Washington insider. He's already telegraphed that, who is capable of governing, check mark for Kasich, because he's been a successful governor in Ohio, which would be a swing state.
One of the two most important states,
right.
The other being Florida.
B, he said, I'm going to need a guy who can cut deals in Washington. Check mark for Kasich. He was a budget director under then the first President Bush.
As far as filling out his resume, you probably could. There's no better pick.
So then, does Kasich become then the Cheney factor that took place in the Bush era of becoming the ideological lodestar of the administration? Does Kasich become that? Because certainly it's not Donald. Donald, as we all know, is an actor. That's what Mitt Romney called him today. And so do you end up shifting? And does he play the role? Because we all know the Donald plays the role. So he gets up. Let's go to the issue of immigration. And he says, and I think this is coming out. We talked about this earlier. New York Times has information. They've done it and says, you know, I'm just doing this for sport. And so does he come out and move completely to the Gang of Eight proposal and say, my running mate says this is what we need to do to make America great again and move forward? And then he's in the middle of the road on that. And so does he transform himself, as an actor does, to a new role on the general election stage?
Wow. We will pick that up after the break. That would be a transformational kind of position. We will talk about that and where that might go in the think tank after the break. KTAR 92.3.
Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
Wow, we are here with Chuck Coughlin, Republican political guru, and you just laid out a staggering scenario. Let me summarize in case somebody's coming in on us. We are starting with the presumption that the nominees of the Republican Party is Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton is the Democratic nominee, the latter being, I think we agreed, more of an absolute certainty.
Mm-hmm.
Trump being a high probability at a minimum.
Yeah, well,
he's presumptive.
If he can win these closed primary states that are coming up, I think that's going to be, and that's going to be the test that he needs to overcome.
So the scenario, and correct me if I get the nuance wrong, you lay out is that he picks a very moderate, probably John Kasich, moderate in the Republican scheme of things, most moderate guy, experienced in Washington, the guy who helps him answer the question, you don't know how Washington works.
Right. And he becomes the intellectual lodestar for the administration, the policy lodestar. And Donald continues to run the rant of, I'm not one of them. I'm going to serve the American people. I'm not here for me. I'm here for you. I'm here to do the right thing. I'm here to make America great again. And if that means cutting deals, we're going to cut deals because that's what I've done as a businessman. I mean, Marco sort of laid out that thing in the South Carolina debate. He laid it on him, saying you'd probably employ illegal immigrants to build your wall. Well, the truth is, Donald would. I mean,
I followed the website, not just, you know, he said Google it. But I did, and there's pretty clear evidence there was a couple of hundred Polish workers who were legal, and you know, I mean, the guy obviously was 30 years ago was not thinking about running for president or this would be a hot issue, and he's trying to put up properties on the cheap.
Yeah, and so the question then becomes if he can do that fandango that we've just talked about, that minuet over to the center of the stage with does his base stay with him, and given the choice of Hillary on the other side, unquestionably, yes, they do. I think they do stick with him because he's got that. He is the only one in the field that can own that narrative of I'm not one of them. I'm not part of the D.C. problem. I'm not part of the swamp of fetid political rhetoric that comes out of Washington. I have not been. I'm going to go there and clean it up. He's going to be the, he's the only guy that can occupy that space. And so, you know, how then the question, you know, how if he's the nominee, then how does Hillary handle that? And who does the then the nominee pick? Does she pick a Republican? Does she pick somebody that counters that move, or pick somebody that is extraordinarily popular, you know, governor or Republican in a swing state that can add intellectual creed to her?
She's got to be careful.
Record.
She's got
she
the
does.
Bernie people nipping at her heels
she
on
does.
That.
She
They'll
does, but it'd be a populist. Goes. It'd yeah. be a populist sort of outsider candidate as well. Mm-hmm. Somebody that will lead credibility to her, but that maintains that narrative, which was the second narrative of the second Clinton administration, which we got it done. Because, I mean, I would argue that our last greatest president was second term Clinton. When the American people, we balanced our budget, we got it done, and you're going to hear that rhetoric from her.
And it was the influence of a split government, but it was a split government that was willing to work with one another.
Right, and I think she, of all people, can speak to that because she was there. I mean, she was part of the crucible of that experience, literally. I mean, her soul and Bill's soul was being burned at the stake of political witch hunts at the time by Republicans in Congress. And so she's going to have that credible statement. So it could turn out to be a very interesting narrative of a general election campaign, depending upon how both candidates handle it. Whatever we think, though, I think conventional wisdom is out the window. Conventional wisdom is out the window. They need to be open to the ideas and possibilities of looking at the electorate in the broadest sense possible and turning out both campaigns, turning out those voters who, after this primary season, are going to be looking, as many people are, who are these people? What did we just do to ourselves? So there's a giant section of the electorate that they're going to be able to appeal to out there.
And looking at the field of alternative candidates, early on, Trump and Cruz got into it in a visceral kind of way. Two debates ago, yep. Rubio jumped into the fray the same way, I think potentially disqualifying himself as a potential vice president. I haven't seen Kasich cross that line.
No.
He's reflected, I think, reasonably on the tenor of the debate overall.
Yeah.
You know, it's childish. Come on, can't we do better than this? But it's not there's not a soundbite in there that a Democratic commercial could use.
No, he hasn't gone there. And, you know, it reminded me, my visual of the last Republican debate was of a St. Bernard dog with a keg around his neck standing in the middle of the stage and two chihuahuas snipping at his heels. And it was a riot.
Kasich being the St. Bernard.
Well, no. Donald leaning into the podium, over the podium, and the two, Rubio and Cruz, sitting on either side, chipping, you know, because Kasich never got on screen. He was so far left. And Carson, you know, Carson's famous line in that debate was, can somebody attack me, please?
The thing that was extraordinary to me about the visuals on that, even when his opponents were scoring really significant rhetorical points against Trump, Trump still had physical command of the stage. And if you only looked at the visual, or even if you had access to the audio, you kind of missed that point. It's kind of like Kennedy Nixon in a way. Yeah. If you read a transcript of the debate, you'd probably say, my God, they just took him apart.
Yeah.
But you look at the visual and he's the big guy in the middle with his arms out commanding the entire stage.
He knows he's not one of them.
Yeah.
And he knows that, and he's playing that card and playing it, and that is literally his trump card. Mm. I am not one of them. And he will continue to play that throughout the cycle. And that is that unfortunately is the very rhetoric that, you know, because guys like Ted Cruz, you know, violated the 11th commandment a long time ago. They went down that road since, you know, in the divisions, in their divisions and how to deal with the Obama administration. They've created a swamp of ridicule within our own party. And in so doing, created this inevitability of a Trump candidate. They themselves have created the path that has created Donald Trump by their own ridicule of their own kind.
Because they all assumed, as we all did at the beginning, that Trump would implode.
Yeah, well, Trump would implode on his own. But we do know this. He was the star of a reality television show. He knows how to handle a microphone. He knows how to grab a headline. And he knows his talking points. He's a good actor. But nobody emptied the clip into him. Nobody did what Romney did to, you know, this week to him then. Had that happened then, I think we would have had a very different outcome. Instead of playing it safe, which was the conventional wisdom, you know, oh, he'll implode, you know, and again, I'm not playing Monday morning quarterback like I'm the smartest guy, but there is a lesson here to be learned. Well, if a guy like that comes along, you got to empty the clip into him right away. You got to go and you got to rhetorically take him down and then use that as your stepping stone, because he is, as Romney laid out the Republican argument today, an illegitimate candidate in the lines of any conservative thinking that's gone on within the Republican Party.
It's not clear that he's a conservative.
No.
He speaks to anger, to be sure.
Sure.
You know, immigration and those kinds of things. He speaks to the anger, but I have no idea. Do you know where he is ideologically? He's given most of his money to Democrats over the years.
I would think he's a pragmatist.
Yeah.
I mean,
and that's I'm not saying he's a Democrat.
No.
He's in New York. He said, listen, as Charlie Keating said, well, did you buy influence? Well, I hope so. I certainly paid enough.
Paid enough money.
It's like that. If you're in New York and you're a real estate developer and you're buying influence, those checks are going to Democrats.
Yeah. And in this cycle where, you know, the American electorate is more turned off by that culture, and now by this, you know, the other issue we've talked about previously on your show, the Citizens United decision, which allowed unlimited amounts of dark, undisclosed political contributions to influence, the American electorate is turned off, and that's what they're reacting. That's the wave that Donald Trump is riding.
I got one before we go to the break. Just one question, kind of a fanciful question. Do you think it ever occurred to Donald Trump on the front end that it would go this far?
No, I am, he'll never admit it. Ever admit it. But I am convinced he got in for, you know, drives up his name ID, you know, maybe he gets a little traction, he gets a little play with
fun.
Some of the, and he's having a ball.
If you have a little bit of an ego, this is the greatest thing in the world.
Oh my gosh,
right?
He's having a ball. And I cannot believe that he would have thought this was going to be this easy for him.
And of course, everybody thought that, and they thought that he would implode, and that's why they didn't attack him in the beginning.
That's right.
If anybody had the benefit of hindsight, as you said, they would have emptied the clip early on.
Yep.
There was no reason to do it. The man was going to implode, and you didn't want to tick off his supporters because you assume that he implodes and you want his supporters on board.
It's the intellectual and political arrogance of both classes of the established political think groups that allows that to happen, because they always think they're the smartest people in the room. Well, guess what? You're not. And some guy comes along and figures it out, and you go along with your conventional wisdom, and we've seen this happen time and time, you know, in American history, in economic policy, you know, and things change. And and once they begin to change, they change very, very fast today.
We'll be back in just a minute. One of the things I want to ask you about as a political consultant, I think one of the interesting things about the Trump candidacy is there doesn't seem to be a class of consultants around him.
No.
And we'll talk about that and what the implications of that might be in just a few minutes when we're back here in the Think Tank, KTAR 92.3 FM.
The Think Tank, KTAR News on 92.3 FM and KTAR.com.
We're back here. Final segment, Chuck Coughlin. We're ruminating about next president of the United States. Chuck has just laid out a scenario where that person is Donald Trump. One of the interesting things about his candidacy, and he's just speculated, and frankly, I agree that he really didn't. This has gone way further than he ever thought it would happen. Mm-hmm. He brags about not having done a poll, which suggests to me that he doesn't understand why you do polling. You don't do a poll to find out whether you're ahead. The news media is good enough. You do that for strategic reasons.
Right.
And no visible consultants around him.
No, and a mastery of the headline, of the art of the headline, you know, and
you know, if he had political consultant, in the first 5 seconds, somebody would have screamed at him and said that KKK mealy mouthed answer. You have to walk that back immediately.
Right, right, and he would have thrown, and he would have fired the guy right away.
Well,
you know, so I mean, that's the other thing, you know.
You not only need a consultant who's smart, you need one you're going
to
listen to.
Well, right, and that's the rule in political consulting business. If you're, you know, I've known this from the time I've been in my career, is that you're only as good as the ability of your candidate is to listen. If your candidate wants to listen to you, well, I don't think Donald's listened to anybody. I mean, he's listened to his own instincts and very people that are close around him. And as we've just articulated, it's a pretty simple message platform he's articulated. One of them.
And it's worked.
And it's worked. Yeah. And so, you know, I think he knows that. And
he probably says, if I had a consultant, they would have told me I can't do what I've already done, which is probably right.
It's absolutely 100%
right. But that doesn't mean that it gets you the next step.
No.
He's appealed to Republican primary constituency, it's not clear that you can continue to pull that off.
I would agree with that.
Which is why you're suggesting
in a general election, you're subjected to a much broader audience. And what we're going to see again on Saturday is that, you know, you're going to have four closed primaries. Let's see. He's only won one.
Yep.
And that's that hardcore base of Republican support that is ideologically, historically, been circled around that the ideology of the Republican Party.
But it's interesting. That suggests that he really is pulling in other than registered Republicans.
He is. I would argue he's pulling in all kinds of different people into the
I know the studies I've seen say that the profile of these Trump voters is non-voters, but they have voted.
Yeah. And I think in open primary states, he's pulling people who are non-traditional Republican voters that maybe Democratic voters as well that are coming over on his side of the camp, particularly in those SEC states down there, in those southern states.
You know, it's interesting, the strategy. I mean, this is not new stuff. This goes back to Richard Nixon. You basically
you
run to the right in the primary, you run to the center in the general.
Yeah, but it's been harder to, you know, as we've gotten electronic media, 24-hour news coverage, you know, instantaneous Twitter, Facebook, you know,
YouTube videos of every previous statement you ever make. Yeah, navigating that is a lot harder.
Which is what they're going to hang around, you know, what the Trump people will hang Romney with now is all the statements that, oh, he used to say these things about me. Now he's saying this. Who's pulling his chains? What Washington insider is telling Mitt Romney what to say? You know, so that's
it'll be interesting to see how my jaw was on the ground listening to that speech.
Well,
that was just, this is not governor of New Jersey. This is the last Republican president. Remind me of his father, too.
Yeah, who was a great governor of Michigan. I said to you on the way in, my parents campaigned for his dad when he was governor of Michigan, you know, but a very different guy.
Also, guy who went down for principal.
Yeah, a guy, absolutely. And we didn't see that Romney in the last
election.
No,
nor did we see that actually fairly pragmatic, moderate governor of Massachusetts.
No, he was boxed up by the aforementioned consultants who said, you can't do that.
Because...
No, that's the conventional wisdom. That's what you're looking at.
For the Republican primary, they were probably right.
Well, but somebody breaks the dam eventually, and that's what's happened now. Whether he could have done it then, I argue he could have done it back then. Mm-hmm. He could have broke conventional wisdom, particularly with his record as governor of Massachusetts. He could have broken with conventional wisdom earlier.
He could have very credibly presented himself as a pragmatic businessman with conservative instincts.
Yeah, I mean,
because that's who he is.
And we don't discount that he had a difficult, you know, a large Republican primary field to navigate through. But once through that, I think he could have opened the gates up in a progressive manner much more in a Teddy Roosevelt style, in a populist Republican style that it was more reminiscent of his father.
Yeah. And as you're suggesting with Trump, the right, hey, where else are they going to go?
Amen. Because they're not voting for Hillary. They'll stay at home and they'll sit on their hands.
They might stay at home. That cost you half as much.
Yeah.
but my guess is most of them return to the fold, and most people in November get pragmatic,
right?
And they say they don't want to do it,
and
they take the lesser.
You know, and you're looking at a Supreme Court nominee right out of the box.
So that's not a theoretical thing.
That's right out of the box. So you got to think that's going to be a card that he's going to be playing a lot. You know, you're going to play that card. You're going to play this card. These are the kind of people I'm going to be looking at. We know who she's. You know, and she's going to be playing it back at him. So it's an interesting year in American politics.
Okay, real quick answer here. You've laid out an intriguing possibility. What do you think the probability he pulls that off is?
I think everybody's underestimated him to date. I'm not going to do it again. I think he's going to pull it off.
You're right. You think he's going to win?
I do.
Okay, there you have it. That's staggering. And
this was from a guy who earlier this year, I've lost a lot of bets on this race so far. So please take my, been wrong before. I'll be wrong again.
If you're saying you discounted Donald Trump in the beginning, you are in a crowd of people that includes like everybody,
right.
including probably Donald Trump himself, who was in it for, I think we agree.
Caveat that with one, if he gets through these primaries on Saturday, these closed primaries, and he wins two out of three or three out of four, he'll be the nominee, and I believe he'll win.
Okay. I have some concluding comments on the subject of political correctness. This is a real-life incident that happened to me this week. There's a checkout lady at a grocery store that I've gotten to know, and you might say, and the oddest thing, how on earth do you get to know somebody who checks your groceries every once in a while? The answer is that this is the most positive, effervescent, just utterly positive human being I've ever met in my life. I stand in a long line to let her check my groceries because it's an up, and I know that it will be the most positive event of the day. Well, this week I was shopping in the grocery store. I won't say which one, but I saw her sitting in the garden section, and I assumed she was taking a break, and I walked over to say hi. When I got there, I found her nearly in tears. Some idiot in the line who prefaced his comment by saying, "I'm not politically correct," then proceeded to make a series of racially charged slurs. The checkout lady's black. "I'm not politically correct" is a statement that's thrown around as if it grants the speaker the license to make racist, misogynistic, rude, ignorant, or simply mean statements, and it's okay because you've announced that you're not politically correct. Listen when you hear that statement. It's almost always followed by an ignorant, gratuitous, and mean statement about somebody. Of course, it really says more about the speaker than it does the object. So I'd ask you, stop for a minute and think. If you're ever tempted to say, "I'm not politically correct," stop for a second. What are you about to say? Is it kind? Does it contribute positively to anything? Will it cause pain? A little civility, please, and some human decency. This is The Think Tank on KTAR.